This is the daily radio ministry of Pastor Sandy Adams of Calvary Chapel, Stone Mountain in Atlanta, Georgia. Pastor Sandy is currently teaching through the book of Psalms. Today, Pastor Sandy will begin in Psalms chapter 139 on this edition of Sandy Adams Radio.
It takes a fertilized egg just 266 days to grow into a 7.5-pound bubbly baby. And understand how quickly an unborn baby begins to grow. At 2 weeks, there's a discernible heartbeat. At 43 days, the baby has detectable brain waves. At 6.5 weeks, the unborn baby starts to move. At 9 weeks, the baby has a unique set of fingerprints. Its sex can be determined. Its kidneys are fully formed and functioning. At just 12 weeks, all of the body's organs are in operation. The baby can cry. All the above occurs in the first trimester of a mom's pregnancy. David knew that he was fashioned by a divine plan. And this is why I'm convinced, both biblically and medically, that abortion as a means of birth control is nothing less than the murder of another human being. Verse 14, I will praise you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Marvelous are your works, and that my soul knows very well. You know, we could spend a long time discussing the intricacies of the human body, what makes possible functions like sight and hearing and language. You know, we're ignorant of so much, and so much we take for granted. We need to acknowledge that we are all just fearfully and wonderfully made by God. Verse 15, my frame was not hidden from you when I was made in secret and skillfully wrought in the lowest parts of the earth. The phrase is in secret, and the lowest parts of the earth is another way of denoting the sacredness and the mystery of what happens in a mother's womb. He says, your eyes saw my substance being yet unformed, and in your book they were all written, the days fashioned for me when as yet there were none of them. Hey, when did God consider David a living human being? At birth? At viability? Oh no, before that. God considers us human from the moment of conception. God maps out our lives before we're even born. Just because you don't see the baby through the skin and through the amniotic fluid, just because you don't see that baby under that skin and under that fluid, doesn't mean that you can kill it. Just because you can't see its limbs and its hands, doesn't mean that you can take a suction tube and vacuum them into a wastebasket. We've gone insane. God sees what happens even in the lowest parts of the earth. God sees. Verse 17, how precious also are your thoughts to me, O God. How great is the sum of them. If I could count them, they would be more in number than the sand. Oh, I love this verse. Whenever I go to the beach, I always sit down and always pick up a handful of sand, and I just let it pour slowly through my fingertips. And I just let it pour slowly, and I even try to count the individual grains the best that I can. And then I recall verse 18, that God's thoughts toward me are more numerous than the innumerable grains of sand along the whole world's shoreline. You know what that means? That means God really must love me. And he loves you that much too. Apparently, God loves us so much that he can't keep us out of his mind. He can't keep his thoughts off of us. The psalmist adds, when I awake, I am still with you. I like that. I've dozed off. I went to sleep. But that didn't mean God wasn't vigilant. That didn't mean God left me. That didn't mean he went to sleep. Didn't mean he forgot me. No, his mind was still on me. Even while I was daydreaming about Kathy Adams, God was still thinking about me. That's the way it works. A man once asked the great missionary Hudson Taylor if there was ever a moment when he was not conscious of abiding in Jesus. And I love how Taylor responded. He said, while sleeping last night, did I cease to abide in your home because I was unconscious of the fact? We should never be conscious of not abiding in Christ. Man, I like this. It's not that faith always sees itself connected to Jesus. Faith never sees itself unconnected. Even while we're asleep, we're still with Jesus. Verse 19, oh, that you would slay the wicked, O God. Now, David has defended the innocent. Now he, as is his custom, he attacks the wicked. He asked God to mete out justice on evil men. He says, depart from me, therefore, you bloodthirsty men, for they speak against you wickedly. Your enemies take your name in vain. You know, again, before you go judging David for his fiery temper toward his enemies, you know, you get run out of your home. You get chased through the wilderness for a couple of decades. And let's see what you think about your enemies. I mean, we're so quick to judge. He says, do I not hate them, O Lord, who hate you? And do I not loathe those who rise up against you? I hate them with perfect hatred. Didn't know there was such a thing, did you? According to David, there is. I hate them with perfect hatred. I count them my enemies. David considers God's enemies his enemies. He hates those who hate God. It's an expression of David's love and loyalty toward God. Of course, God would tell us as Christians that when it comes to us expressing our love for him, we should do it by loving our enemies, doing good to them. We should fight our enemies, but we should always remember that Christians fight evil with good. And it goes on, search me, O God, and know my heart. He's back full circle. This is how he started the psalm. And know my anxieties, and see if there is any wicked way in me, and lead me in the way everlasting. I dare you to pray that prayer tonight. God, search me and see if there's any wicked way in me. He'll expose it. He'll deal with it. He loves you that much. He wants to purge those things from your life. And he asked God to search his motives. God, turn over a few rocks in my life. I need that. Notice this. David has a healthy suspicion of his own motives and his own sincerity. I mean, so do I. Even on my good days, I know there's some defilement in my life. There's some dirt along with the good. Hopefully there's a lot of good going on in my life, but I know there's some things that are not so good, even on my good days. You know, we need to have a healthy suspicion of our own problems. Never forget your capacity for hypocrisy and duplicity. I mean, you catch that with your kids all the time. You start to reprimand them for something you just did 15 minutes ago. You know how that is. We're so capable of that. And here David asks God to purge him and to purify him. He knows that he needs to be fumigated from time to time. He just needs to be fumigated with truthfulness and with humility. All believers need regular course corrections. And God is faithful to provide them if we ask and if we wait. Well, Psalm 140. Wow, just 11 more to go. Psalm 140 through 143 were all written by David in difficult circumstances. The backdrop for these psalms could have been when David was on the run from King Saul, or it could have been the height of his son Absalom's rebellion. Verse 1 begins, deliver me, O Lord, from evil men. Preserve me from violent men who plan evil things in their hearts. They continually gather together for war. They sharpen their tongues like a serpent. The poison of asps is under their lips. Now, a snake's tongue, I think we got a shot of it. There we go. A snake's tongue is a censer. It sticks out its tongue to pick up scents and vibration. You could say a snake smells with its tongue. David's enemies, he says, are sniffing him out. They're going in for the kill. And when a poisonous asp bites its victim, the muscle in its upper jaw squeezes the venom from nearby glands through the snake's hollow fangs. His teeth act like hypodermic needles. That's why he says that the poison of asp is under their lips. They sharpen their tongues like a serpent. David's enemies have sharpened their teeth to inject their poison. Verse 4, keep me, O Lord, from the hands of the wicked. Preserve me from violent men who have purposed to make my steps stumble. The proud have hidden a snare for me in cords. They have spread a net by the wayside. They have set traps for me. I said to the Lord, you are my God. Hear the voice of my supplications, O Lord. O God, the Lord, the strength of my salvation. You have covered my head in the day of battle. Do not grant, O Lord, the desires of the wicked. Do not further his wicked scheme, lest they be exalted. Verse 10. As for the head of those who surround me, let the evil of their lips cover them. Let burning coals fall upon them. Let them be cast into the fire, into deep pits, that they rise not up again. You know, Paul mentions the heaping of hot coals on the heads of his enemies in Romans 12, verse 20. There he writes, if your enemy hungers, feed him. If he thirsts, give him a drink. For in so doing, you will heap coals of fire on his head. Notice this, we heap coals on our enemy and torment them by responding to their evil with good. Not by lowering ourselves to their level. He says, let not a slanderer be established in the earth. Let evil hunt the violent man to overthrow him. I know that the Lord will maintain the cause of the afflicted and justice for the poor. Surely the righteous shall give thanks to your name. The upright shall dwell in your presence. Psalm 141 begins, Lord, I cry out to you. Make haste to me. Give ear to my voice when I cry out to you. Now, I love David's simple and sincere approach to prayer. He just cries out to God. No flowery speech, no embellished language here, just an anguished cry. A man named Jim used to have an interesting approach to prayer. He would pray, hello, Jesus, this is Jim. A friend was with Jim when he died, and he reported Jim's last words. Jim said to his buddy, Jesus just came, and do you know what he said to me? He said, hello, Jim, this is Jesus. You know, our tendency is to make prayer far more complicated than it needs to be. David just cries out to the Lord. He says, let my prayer be set before you as incense. You know, sometimes our prayer doesn't even take words. It's just like a burning incense that just floats up to God. The lifting up of my hands as the evening sacrifice. Sometimes words might not even rise, but we can lift our hands to God. Set a guard, O Lord, over my mouth. Keep watch over the door of my lips. Now, he prays a simple prayer, but it is an extremely important prayer. Here he prays a prayer that we all should pray. Watch what you say. Put a sentinel, put an armed guard at the gate of your mouth. For once a word leaves your lips, you can never get it back. In Psalm 140, David worries about his enemy's lying tongue. In Psalm 141, he's concerned about his own tongue. Both slander and slips can be a problem. He says, do not incline my heart to any evil thing, to practice wicked works with men who work iniquity, and do not let me eat of their delicacies. Now, there were men who were waiting on David to make a rash or a harsh comment that they could use against him. They wanted to hang him with his own words. Remember, this was the Pharisees' strategy with Jesus. They threw tricky questions at him in the temple in hopes of catching him in some slip-up, in some error, in some slip of the lip. And this was the tactic of evil men in 1000 BC and 30 AD. How much more is this the strategy of evil men in an age of information and of constant recordings and permanent playbacks and YouTube and Facebook and internet? Hey, we should never leave our bedroom in the morning until we post a guard by our mouth or by our keyboard. For once we've written that email, once we've said those words, we can never get it back. Verse 5, let the righteous strike me, it shall be a kindness, and let him rebuke me, it shall be as excellent oil, let my head not refuse it. Now here's what made David such a great man, such a man after God's own heart. He was not too proud to receive the rebuke of the righteous. He welcomed constructive criticism from faithful and from godly brothers. And I think this is a mark of maturity. Are we willing to receive constructive criticism? You know, it's been said, the trouble with most of us is that we would rather be ruined by praise than saved by criticism. We all need to be open to correction. David can handle a rebuke from a righteous man, but the destructive criticism of wicked men, this is what angers him. He says, for still my prayer is against the deeds of the wicked. Their judges are overthrown by the sides of the cliff, and they hear my words, for they are sweet. Our bones are scattered at the mouth of the grave, as when one plows and breaks up the earth. But my eyes are upon you, O God, the Lord. In you I take refuge. Do not leave my soul destitute. Keep me from the snares that have laid for me and from the traps of the workers of iniquity. Let the wicked fall into their own nets while I escape safety. I would imagine Jesus prayed that prayer when he went into the temple, knowing that the Pharisees were going to bombard him with questions, tricky questions. You know, he felt like he was walking through a minefield and he just prayed, Lord, help me to avoid the snares of my enemies. Now, while he was a fugitive and on the run from Saul, David lived for a time in two different caves. He lived in the cave of Adullam, which was near his hometown of Bethlehem. And he also lived for a time in a cave near En-Gedi, which was an oasis bordering on the Dead Sea. And Psalm 142 could have been written in either of those situations. It fits the circumstances of both situations. Verse 1, I cry out to the Lord with my voice. With my voice to the Lord, I make my supplication. I pour out my complaint before him. I declare before him my trouble. Now, I'll be honest. There are times when I get tired of hearing certain people complain. But that's not the Lord's attitude. Here he encourages us to pour out our complaints, to declare our troubles. When my spirit was overwhelmed within me, then you knew my path. In the way in which I walk, they have secretly set a snare for me. Look on my right hand and see, for there is no one who acknowledges me. Refuge has failed me. No one cares for my soul. What a terrible feeling David experiences here. No one cares. You ever said that? Man, just, I don't think anybody cares about my situation. It's as if he's on his own here. But there is one place he can turn. He says, I cried out to you, O Lord. I said, you are my refuge, my portion in the land of the living. Attend to my cry, for I am brought very low. Deliver me from my persecutors, for they are stronger than I. Bring my soul out of prison, that I may praise your name. The righteous shall surround me, for you shall deal bountifully with me. Even in the midst of his troubles, he puts his hope in the Lord. Psalm 143. Hear my prayer, O Lord. Give ear to my supplications. In your faithfulness, answer me, and in your righteousness. Do not enter into judgment with your servant, for in your sight, no one living is righteous. We've all sinned against God. None of us could survive God's judgment. If God is counting strokes, we're all over par, man. We need grace. He says, for the enemy has persecuted my soul. He has crushed my life to the ground. He has made me dwell in darkness like those who have long been dead. Therefore, my spirit is overwhelmed within me. My heart within me is distressed. David just doesn't know what to do. He just feels overwhelmed. He says, I remember the days of old. I meditate on all your works. I muse on the work of your hands. I spread out my hands to you. My soul longs for you like a thirsty land. Answer me speedily, O Lord. My spirit fails. Do not hide your face from me, lest I be like those who go down into the pit. I mean, he's so overwhelmed here. He doesn't know what to do. And so he reverts back to default setting. David does what's habitual for him. He does what he's always done. He spends time with God. He meditates and muses and longs for God. And this is what he needed to do all along. You see, here David is the recipient and the beneficiary of good spiritual habits, godly disciplines that he's worked into his life over years from his youth. You see, when he doesn't know what to do, he does what he's always done. He just turns instinctively to God for his help and for his comfort. Which begs the question, what is your default mode? Now, if I ask you to just revert to default, that could get real dangerous for some of you guys. Because you haven't built godly habits in your life. You don't have this habitual pattern in your life of turning to God. When you're in trouble, you run the opposite direction. You try to numb it with things of the world. You try to drown it out with the poisons of sin. You know, this is how you approach your troubles. David, though, had made a habit of turning to God in difficult times. And so when he was in trouble, when he doesn't really know what to do, he just punches default. And he goes right back to what he should be doing all along. And that's trusting God and loving God and thinking about God and meditating on God. It's never too late to build godly spiritual habits in your life. It's never too late to begin spiritual disciplines, like a quiet time in the morning, like memorization of Scripture, like regular Bible reading, like faithful church attendance, like daily prayers, and just like just the instinctive impulse whenever you're in trouble, you know, to go to the Lord. Whether it's at the job, whether it's in the car, whether it's with the wife, whether it's with the kids, it's just to stop and pull back and say, Lord, help me. Those kinds of regular disciplines, working them in our lives is good because there will come a time when we're overwhelmed and we don't know what to do and we'll go back to that default setting. This is why we need these good spiritual habits. Verse 8, cause me to hear your loving kindness in the morning. Apparently he had a morning time with God. For in you do I trust. Cause me to know the way in which I should walk, for I lift up my soul to you. And I love the psalmist's request. Cause me to know the way in which I should walk. I like that. He's asking God to reveal his will. And I think this is important because it shows that David has far more confidence in God's ability to speak than in his ability to hear. He says, show it to me, God. Make it clear to me. I know you can reveal your will to me. You want me to know your will more than I do, so show me your will. Deliver me, O Lord, from my enemies. In you I shall take shelter. Teach me to do your will, for you are my God. Your spirit is good. Lead me in the land of uprightness. Revive me, O Lord, for your name's sake. For your righteousness' sake, bring my soul out of trouble. I love Psalm 143. David is praying, God, hear me, answer me, cause me, deliver me, teach me, lead me, revive me. In short, do your work in me. In the last verse, David prays for God to do his work in his enemies. A work of a different sort, I might add. Verse 12. In your mercy, cut off my enemies and destroy all those who afflict my soul, for I am your servant. And David, he's always faithful. He waxes eloquent about his love for God, and he opens his heart to God, and then right at the end of the psalm, he sticks it to his enemies.
In today's message, Pastor Sandy continued through the book of Psalms. Even if you've never read a verse from this 150-chapter book, you've heard it quoted many times in your life. Inspirational quotes at work or at a practice for your sports league, perhaps. You might even see or read quotes while scrolling through your favorite social feed. And if you listen to music, then you've heard song lyrics from this book used in almost every genre of music out there. While that's good, it's important to go back to the source from time to time and read the context around these quotes for yourself. After all, there's nothing more dangerous than applying God's word incorrectly. You've been listening to Sandy Adams Radio with our pastor and teacher, Sandy Adams. Pastor Sandy comes to us from Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain, located in Atlanta, Georgia. Are you in the area? We would love to see you on a Sunday morning at 9:15 or 11:15. For more information, head over to our website, sandyadams.org, and select the About tab. Once again, that website is sandyadams.org. Pastor Sandy brings sound, biblical teaching as he goes through the Bible verse by verse. You'll hear the truth loud and clear and learn how to stick to that truth when others around you stray. We're so glad you decided to spend your time with us here today. That's all we have for now, but be sure to come back again for more on Sandy Adams Radio.